I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Nice to have you with us for another edition of KSL Outdoors Radio here on a beautiful Saturday morning, waking up to about 65 degrees. The forecast, what are we looking for today? Is it going to be upper 80s, lower 90s, somewhere in there? And not much, if any, chance of precipitation, I don't think, coming at all in the foreseeable future. So 91 the forecast today, 88 tomorrow. Hello. I guess that's me. I always have to remember that when you click on websites these days, these things will pop up. So here's the way the weather shapes up. It'll be 91 today, 88 tomorrow, and then 90s, or right at 90 degrees for the rest of the week, with little or no chance of any precipitation coming. There's another story I wanted to make sure we made a mention of, and I promised yesterday Mark Hadley and Faith Jolly that we would do this, and that is just to warn everybody, if you're headed down to Lake Powell, the beginning this weekend, so like today, the Division of Wildlife Resources is boosting its inspection and decontamination capacity along the routes leaving Lake Powell to more efficiently meet boater needs. Additionally, law enforcement is increasing its efforts to identify violators and cite them when necessary. And here's what's happening down at Lake Powell. Because the water is rising so fast, the quagga situation has really worsened down there because previously exposed mussels are dislodging from those canyon walls are now floating in the water.
Oh, geez.
And they were in such numbers that they're causing some problems down there. They could be ingested, of course, through your intake systems if you have an inboard-outboard motor on your boat. The change means significantly more boats are leaving Lake Powell with mussels and shells aboard their vessels, sucked into their sea strainers on anchors and in compartments compared to last year. And as a result, it's critical that all boats leaving the lake be inspected. What that means is it's going to be a lot longer wait, first of all, for people that are going down there to play. So beginning this weekend, a decontamination station is going to be available at a new mandatory inspection station in Kanab. Staffing capacity to handle more decontaminations is also being increased in state parks along the I-15 corridor, including Sand Hollow, Yuba, and Utah Lake. Boaters can also expect a new mandatory inspection station to open in Hanksville in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
The important thing is, you know, remember what these folks are trying to do.
Yeah.
They know it's inconvenient for you or could be inconvenient for you, but you don't want to be the person that ends up transporting these quaggas to another favorite playground of yours and then having some of the same problems that we're having in Lake Powell right now.
I don't know if we can ever get rid of the problem, but at least everybody can help out and slow it up.
Yeah. You know,
not have the quagga mussel take over everything.
We have to manage it, and keeping it from spreading to other waters is tough, but I hadn't even thought about the challenges of the rising waters and what that does, you know, to quaggas being in the water that are then ingested into intake water systems. But a bit of a nightmare there, and we just wanted to get that out for everybody. Limited decontamination options available at Lake Powell. They offer them in locations en route out of Lake Powell at no cost to boaters, and those locations include offshore marina outside of Bullfrog, the Kanab Mandatory Inspection Station, Sand Hollow State Park in Hurricane, Yuba State Park, and Utah Lake State Park. So keep that in mind this weekend. I'll tell you what, while we wait to hear from Donnell, if we can, let's go ahead and just jump into a conversation that I had yesterday with the Division of Wildlife Resources about some rare known or lesser known mammals in the state of Utah. I had a chance to talk with Kim Hersey. All right, Kim Hersey is our non-game mammals and birds wildlife coordinator. That's a mouthful and a lot to put on a business card, Kim. But tell everybody what your responsibilities are here in the state.
Okay. I primarily work with our non-game mammals program. So pretty much any species that's not hunted or trapped in the state falls to my program. And I also work closely with our non-game birds coordinator.
How many species? I mean, do you even know by count how many you might deal with?
Oh, there's approximately 120, 130 species of mammals in the state.
Wow.
So, and probably about, 100 of those fall to my program.
Yeah. Faith Jolly passed along a news release for me to sort of skim over before we had our conversation, and she made the point that a lot of Utahns will see things like deer and jackrabbits and a lot of birds in the state, but there are three species in particular that most people may not realize live here in Utah, and we thought we'd just highlight those three today, the first of which happens to be flying squirrels.
Yes, flying squirrels are a super intriguing species. They're primarily found in sort of the conifer mixed deciduous zones. So once you get up into the mountains a little bit farther, you'll start to encounter this species. But, they're nocturnal. They live in the treetops, so very few people get to catch a glimpse of them.
Yeah, now are these the guys we've seen on some documentaries before that sort of have, almost wings when they take off and jump from one tree to another?
Exactly. You can think of it sort of like a flying suit that people will occasionally try to use. They've got a membrane called a patagium that stretches from their hind limbs to their legs, and they'll run up a tree and jump off and glide to the next one, lift their tail up, to sort of like air brakes to help them land to the next tree.
You use the word glide. I guess that's the key here. They don't really fly, do they?
Exactly. Bats are our only true flying mammal that we have.
All right, and the fact that these guys are nocturnal and high in the trees explains why most people wouldn't even know they exist, probably.
Exactly. We did a research study probably about 10 years or so now, concerned that they might be super rare or declining, and we put traps out and caught them in more places and more frequently than we would expect to. We've also put out remote cameras baited with peanut butter tubes and got quite a few photos of them. So one of those times where you go looking and you find what you're looking for.
One of the things that was mapped out in this press release that I got from Faith was how far they actually go on average, but how far they've been recorded to fly. I think people will find that surprising.
Yeah, an average glide can be up to around 65 feet. So thinking about that is amazing. But when you think about that they've been recorded traveling up to 325 feet in a single glide, that's nearly a football field in a glide. So that's an amazing ability.
Yeah, and obviously that would be from a pretty tall tree, probably to another pretty tall tree somewhere.
Exactly, and that's probably aided by slope and everything else like that.
Yeah. There is another characteristic that I find interesting, and, we were out on our border-to-border ride when we were on ATVs going from from Idaho down to Arizona, and one of the wildlife coordinators took us out and showed us under a blacklight what a scorpion looks like, and they kind of glow in the dark, but I guess these flying squirrels do too.
Yeah, a recent research paper came out that found that they glow under blacklight. They have no idea why or what the reason would be, but it's just one of those weird wildlife facts that come up. Perhaps they're out having raves in the forest that we just don't know about.
All right, so tell our listeners again, if they wanted to see flying squirrels, their best chance would be to go where?
The best chance would be, go up in the mountains, sort of in the area where you're up into the conifer zone with big trees. They nest in hollows and inside of trees. So If you're out camping, go ahead and shine your lights up into the treetops, and maybe you'll get lucky.
All right, the other species, and just call me stupid, but I never made this connection to the pika, which are really cute little devils. I never made the connection to that and the Pokemon character Pikachu, but I guess that's where it comes from.
Apparently, it's based on that. There's several species that are found throughout the world, but in Utah, we have the American pika, and it's found primarily up in the mountaintops and lives in talus slopes, so big jumbled piles of rocks. It lives down in those crevices.
And they are cute little devils. It's described in the press release as a cross between a rabbit and a mouse. It's tiny but got big ears.
Yeah, they're just, you know, definitely contending for one of the most adorable critters that we have in Utah. And their behaviors are just adorable to me, too. They sort of scurry from rock to rock, and they'll jump up on the rock and do an alarm call, and sort of an eep-eep, and just scurrying around the rocks, jumping in and out. Oftentimes, you'll even see them collecting food for the winter, so they'll clip all different sorts of vegetation up in the mountains, but a lot of flowers, so it'll look like they're running around carrying a little bouquet in their mouth.
All right, you said pika, I said pika. I guess I've been saying it wrong all these years. You do have to go, though, into rocky areas and probably do a little work of your own if you're going to have a chance to see these guys.
Yeah, if you're up in the mountaintops, pretty much throughout any of areas of the state, these are a lot more easy to see. They are diurnal, and so if you go to those talus slopes, listen for that alarm call and look around. You'll often see them.
Wasatch, you went to the Tushers, the LaSalle Mountains, even Fish Lake Forest area, or down around Cedar Breaks were suggested places. They're not long-lived critters, though, are they?
No, they only live around 4 years. You know, they are related to rabbits, so you think about very similar to them and their life history, and they're a prey item, too, to things like eagles and weasels.
Do we see boom and bust populations with them like we do rabbits?
We don't tend to. They're fairly territorial along these talus slopes, so there's usually one or two in a given small area, and they seem to be pretty stable. We've been documenting populations pretty intensively for 12 years or so now, and the populations have been stable over that time.
All right. The last of the three we wanted to highlight today was the river otter, and my guess is most people are aware they're here, but many people probably haven't seen them.
Yeah, they're another one of these mammals that are just sort of hidden away, and count yourself lucky if you see them. Like their name suggests, though, they do live primarily around rivers in the state, although in other areas where you've got more lakes, you'll find them in lakes. I've seen one along the edge of the ocean. So, you know, any aquatic habitats they can use. But in Utah, they're most likely to be seen on Flaming Gorge Reservoir and the Green River downstream from there, although they are found throughout the Colorado system. And we did a reintroduction effort in the Provo River about 10 years ago now.
They've really had a rough go of it, too, throughout history, a lot of it due to overtrapping, but I guess human population and human pollution probably has not helped much.
Exactly. You know, throughout most of the continental United States, river otters were wiped out due to trapping, anything that would reduce the fish populations in the river. And this is really one of our conservation success stories in that they've been brought back to pretty much all of their historical range. You know, our efforts in Utah started in 1989, bringing them back to the Green River. And so, you know, from a species that was nearly wiped out, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah. If you get a chance to see them in the wild, and I was trying to remember exactly where we were when we saw them, and we saw not one but two, And we were on a float trip, and it may have been the Green River several years ago. We went from Moab down to Lake Powell through Cataract Canyon. And in some of those quieter areas where you're just floating along, if you see more than one of them at a time, man, they are playful.
They are. They're often wrestle and roll around the banks and pop their heads up along the water.
Chase each other around.
Exactly. Slide on their bellies along the mud and the snow. So they're a super fun animal to observe if you get the opportunity.
Well, wildlife viewing, as we have mentioned on this show before, still counts, and I guess it because it encompasses so many species and so many interests of a wide variety of people, but it continues to be the number one outdoor activity when you add everything up. And so we would encourage people maybe to add these three to your list and put in a little extra effort to go find them and check them off your list for seeing them here in Utah. We sure appreciate you helping us out today. And again, if you want more information on this, there's information always on the Division of Wildlife Resources website, which is just wildlife.utah.gov. But Kim Hersey has been our guest today, our non-game mammals and bird wildlife coordinator here in the state of Utah. Kim, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tell you a story about a little fella, black and blue with the hands of yellow, the bluegill boogie.
Got a little bluegill boogie. I'll tell you what though, Matt, fade that music out, because I doubt we're going to do much talking of fishing today. It's going to be more of something like this.
We going to get up and dance on this one?
Do a little. No, that's.
What?
Close enough, man. Same continent.
What?
No, it isn't.
Same place.
You know what? These guys are Irish.
Yeah.
That's the best of the chieftains. What are you talking about?
What is your problem?
That's the chieftains?
That's the chieftains.
Everybody knows that's the chieftains.
Bagpipe band. Chieftains are a Celtic band. They play Irish music.
All right, let me try. Yeah. Is this better?
That's a little better, yeah.
That's Flattened Scruggs.
No, it's not. Tell everybody where you are, by the way.
I'm in Ireland.
You're in Ireland. You're with your people.
I'm driving with me wife on the wrong side of the road.
Attaboy. I've been loving the pictures and even the videos that you're sending along of some of the fun you're having in the Irish pubs over there.
Oh, it's so great. I've been to Turkey Tree, you know.
and playing a little golf along the way.
Playing a little golf. In fact, I know a whole lot about the rough.
I'll bet you do.
About the fairway.
I'll bet you do. And Predator was saying before he went over there that he wasn't in fear of you beating him on any course you decided to golf on, so that's good.
No, that's true. There's only one word for Predator, and it's par.
Par. It sounds like you're having a wonderful time. We've only got about 2.5 minutes here, but this is just the first leg of your trip, right?
Yeah, this is the first leg. The strongest leg I want to stand on, though. Yeah, we're in Ireland, and then on Monday we leave for Amsterdam. We'll be there 3 or 4 days, and then we head down to Florence, Italy for 3 or 4 days.
Man.
We're going to fly back to Paris, and then I'm going to get on my bike and ride all the way to London.
Attaboy.
Sounds like you're living the dream, man.
He is living the dream.
Think about all the accents he's got to learn.
I know. look, here's the thing. Yesterday, France, and I told you this a couple of days ago, I hope this heat wave is over because France registered its hottest day ever of 114 degrees.
I saw that. A lot of tourists are going to like the hospital and stuff because of the heat.
Yeah.
It's hot in Ireland, too. They're all sunburned here. They're not used to it at all. And there's no air conditioning in any hotels. I'm going to really struggle there in Italy in a week or so.
Yeah. And that's the one thing nobody thinks about. We were in Paris a week ago, and there is no air conditioning. My son, who had never been to Europe, kept fiddling with the thermostat in the room. He said, there's a snowflake on here, but all I can get is the fan to work. There's no cold air coming up. They don't have air conditioning.
No, and they don't have ice either for drinks, so.
And no ice.
Okay. That's true.
That confirms to me.
Yeah.
There's another place I can't go.
Well, it looks like it's a fantastic time. By the way, I got a note from Mickey and Finn yesterday that they have a permit this week to backpack Yellowstone on Wednesday through Saturday, I think. Nice.
Yeah, that's correct. They got a backcountry permit. They're going to go to the headwaters of the Yellowstone and get some of those ancient cutthroats before they're all gone.
Well, we're going to try and check in with them this week. I'm on the road to Orlando, but we're going to try and make that work so the boys can check in with us. But man,
tell the boys to come and get a phone.
Yeah, they got to get a sat phone because they're going to be way out in the back of nowhere.
All right. I didn't really think you were going to call in today, but this is good stuff. Yeah. Look, buddy, we're out of time, but you and Gail have a wonderful time. Looks like you're already doing that. And travel safe, and hopefully this heat wave is over there.
I agree. It's great to chat with you guys.
All right, buddy.
Take care, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye.
The Irishman enjoying his time with his lady.
There you go.
All right, we're going to break. ABC News is coming up at the top of the hour. On the other side, we take you to Snowbird. Speaking of hot weather down here in the valleys, we'll get you to the cool air. On the plaza yesterday, it was 73. At 10,000 feet on Hidden Peak, it was 52. So you want a way to beat the heat? Go to Snowbird this weekend. We'll take you there next at 7 o'clock. Don't go away.
Live breaking news now on the mobile app for KSL News Radio. Listen at home or anywhere you go. Brought to you by Any Hour Services. KSL FM Midvale. KSL Salt Lake City. KSL News Radio. This is Utah's news station.